Everyone, welcome to another episode of The Banter Pub FC, the sauciest team in the game and the spiciest takes on the pitch. And, you know, this is my first time hosting, so I feel so grateful and thankful. I want to do, you know, in the spirit of pubs, I want to give us a special pub shout out. And I want to big up one of my favorite pubs in Orlando called Will's Pub. In downtown Orlando, when it's safe and you're able to go outside and you're vaccinated, of course, I encourage you to go. Don't go right now, but I want to give a special pub shout out to Will's Pub in Orlando. But in our pub today, we have myself, Jonathan, the amazing Mr. City person himself. We have Adam, we have Neil, we have Amma, and we have Joseph, and of course, Roz are the ones and twos in the background. What up, Roz? So today we're going to be talking about a lot of things. We're going to be going around the pitch, talking about the leagues, league position, how different leagues in Europe are going. We're going to talk a little bit about, not a little bit, but a lot about U.S. soccer, particularly a certain person that has been kicked out of the Athletic Council for racist statements. And also talk a little bit about the Women's League, too. And you know, we have another special section around a one manager named Sachi. And we're going to do our extra time. So welcome. Welcome, everybody, at the pub. And we're going to start around the pitch. A lot of things have gone down this week. We'll talk about the Premier League last because that's a foregone conclusion. I think we know the result of that one, and I won't spoil it. But I want to start with Ligue 1, the French league, which is surprisingly competitive this year. You know, we have a really tight race at the top. All the top four with 7 points within each other. So let's talk about Ligue 1. What do y'all think should be the big story we should be covering?
I think the big story is Lille, right, and how resilient they've been in holding on to this tender lead at the top of the table. It's by this time in the season, most seasons, PSG is running away with it, but Lille is making it tough on them. Not only that, like Lyon is also breathing down the neck of PSG, so like nothing is settled, and I like it.
It's intense. Yeah, so Lille is on 62 points after 28 matches played. Paris Saint-Germain is at 60, Lyon's at 59, and Monaco is at 55.
And we've seen, you know, as a Lyon supporter, after the amazing match against Marseille, as of this recording, there was some late drama, but that's to be expected when Lyon and Marseille play. I was anticipating an end-to-end match. It's what we got. I have been really impressed by Lyon this season. They've been hyper-focused in a multifaceted way for a team that doesn't usually get a whole lot of attention paid to it. You know, other leagues call it a farmer's league because PSG has run away with the title for several consecutive years, and the other teams haven't, the other clubs haven't really been that competitive, honestly. And that's because PSG was kind of doing what Bayern does in Germany, which is when a player, like for instance, a Kylian Mbappe does really well at an AS Monaco, PSG buys them. Unless Kylian leaves anytime soon, which I don't think is possible because he's really enjoying his time at PSG and being a member of the Jordan brand, I mean, gets no better than that. So, you know, PSG is really controlling their own destiny right now. I don't think they're going to do – I think they want to do better in the Champions League than they have in the past. But certainly better than last season. I mean, they came – they were in the title match, and they lost to Bayern 1-0. I would imagine because the team didn't really change that much, meaning PSG as a club, they obviously changed managers. But outside of that, I think we're dealing with a hungry. I don't know how any of you feel, but I feel like from a hungry standpoint, I think the French league, Ligue 1, is a lot hungrier this season. The players seem hungrier, the clubs seem hungrier, and it's not just PSG.
I agree with that too. And I would say that I think that I agree with the take that, right, they had, I feel like the owners have, the focus is on winning Europe. Like, obviously, you start with a base of the dominance, establishing it in La Ligue 1 just so you can make Champions League every year. But I think the focus has been for them is winning that. So I think that's where the focus for PSG will be this year. I mean, not to say that they don't want to win Ligue 1, but I can see them, like, the reason PSG is in this is because they can get distracted, and they have, I mean, they still have the biggest goal differential, but they've lost more matches than Lille. That's just what's happened, and it's because they just lost focus in those matches. And I can see them focusing on their future Champions League matches and doing better than they did last year, which is obviously winning it, and taking their eye off Ligue 1 and having, and not necessarily, I know they still got matches to play against Marseille, Lyon, you know, other people, but just those other matches, the matches that you would just be, oh, that's automatic win, and then you draw points. Maybe they don't lose, but it's a draw. And then, you know, Lille is out of their competition. They did get knocked out of Europa League by Ajax. So this is pretty much all they have going forward. You know, again, PSG can get distracted. It's happened before we were even this deep into Champions League, and PSG's dropped it. So I agree with you, though, Neil, like, in terms of just hungry. Like, Lille has a lot to just keep playing for. I mean, and all those teams, it's just, and they all have a better, I feel like the level of talent across the league is also catching up. I mean, Ligue 1 has been right. Like, Monaco has always been somebody to send great players on. I mean, even Saint-Étienne has done it in the past. So, but now they're keeping their players longer and letting them be more homegrown. So I think there's just a better talent spread across the league as well.
Yeah, exactly. For one, Lille, you know, shout out to Timothy Weah, U.S. representing Liberia raised. Shout out to Jacques, aka Renato Sanchez. I mean, I remember when he was first coming up, like, he was a star from Portugal.
This man actually called Renato Sanchez Jacques.
He looks like Jacques.
No,
am I wrong about that?
Yes, you are. All right, how dare you? Like,
the
what?
Portuguese R&B king, like, wow.
I understand, like, wow, bro. Like, put some a picture respect up on that man's name.
Put a picture up of Renato Sanchez and Jacques without saying who they are, and you'll get it confused 9 times out of 10. I guarantee you that.
Guys, please remember after we post this episode that we're gonna have a poll on the Banter Pub FC Twitter. So please, we'll vote, like, just yes or no, or is Jonathan out of his mind? So
yeah, we've had enough because we have to deal with Jonathan's trifling nonsense every week. It's time for the people to pick up some of the heavy lifting around here. Okay, like, can you deal with this man's nonsense? And can you please tell him to his face, what, how did you get these two men mixed up, sir? Like, what is wrong with you? What's your major malfunction? Are you well? Like, is everything well, okay at home? Like, wow.
I'm a man of the people.
I mean, here's another howler for Lille as a club. You know, they have strikers like Jonathan David, who's been, who people would say is, or Canadians would argue is a Canadian Messi. I don't necessarily agree with that.
Whoa.
The kid's got some talent. He can, you know, put the ball in the back of the net. Obviously, he's their primary goal scorer. He's been, you know, his goal average is incredibly high. And, you know, Lille is not, I think this is the first time Lille has actually seen a level of success in a very long time. So we should not discount, despite the fact that, you know, our host for this week has decided to equate Renato Sanchez to Jacquees, which the Banter Pub FC podcast does not, just one of us, you know, just one of our hosts does. That not listening.
No, but I mean, Lille's doing, they're doing great. They're doing amazing. And like I always said, like PSG, they've walked the league 4, 5, 6, 7 years in a row. They're clearly going for the Champions League. That's their focus, which, you know, all the teams that have won it consistently in Europe, continue, like including Serie A with Juventus, they're thinking about the Champions League. So it makes sense that, and you know, this only 2 points differential from them. They don't have Neymar. He's still hurt. So when he comes back, it might totally change. And, you know, it might be, you know, 5, 6 points ahead come the end of the season. So, but
unless his sister has another birthday that we don't know about. Then
we'll find out.
We need to, you know what? Shout out to Scams, Nigerian Scams, for basically influencing ESPN FC to carry that joke from the bowels of football Twitter all the way to mainstream prominence. Like, I've never seen anything quite like it. The Neymar and his sister joke has been one of the longest running gags in football Twitter history. And big, wow. Big ESPN FC tweeted it like a few weeks ago. And I haven't been the same since.
Shout out to Scams for real.
Scams is definitely going to be, when it's all said and done, his influence and his brand of chaos and hilarity will sustain us going forward for the rest of this pandemic. Like, I mean, I feel like Neymar is going to show up whenever he feels like. Ultimately, is the point that I want to make here. We do this every year, where he disappears for like a month or so. I can't understand this whole devotion, you know, devotion to going and being there for your sister's birthday. Like, you know, does it have to be every year? Like, can you give it a miss 1 year? Can she come see you? Like, like what's the, like, what
you
is say,
can you not party in Paris? Is it,
can you
like,
not,
is it that
like,
bad?
Is
the lockdown really restrictions are too rough.
But okay, the years before, like, come on, man.
You know, life
we
will
do
go
this
on.
Every year. Like, I just, it doesn't make any sense. But then again, PSG is stacked, so it doesn't necessarily matter.
Right.
Okay. I'm hoping that Lille finally do the thing and win the league for the first time in a long time. So, you know, well, although it's kind of going to be like a, what's his name? Bryce Harper, national situation, seeing that Pepe left Lille to come to Arsenal and then Lille goes and wins Ligue 1, kind of sticking the crawl just a little bit. But it's fine. I believe in Pepe and we'll go on to win the Premier League with Pepe.
You had to give the Arsenal shout out, but that's okay. Let's move on to Bundesliga. I guess the second closest race in Europe right now. Currently, Bayern, of course, top of the league, 52 points. And RB, which it's Red Bull, but nobody likes to say it's Red Bull. People, annoying nerds on Twitter, like, don't like to say that. But Red Bull Leipzig at 50 points at 23. Wolfsburg, distant third at 45. It doesn't seem distant, but it truly is because this is the Bundesliga. So let's focus on the top two, Bayern and Leipzig. Any thoughts that folks might have or anything that might stick out? Because I see Dortmund is well out of the race, even though...
Yeah, they're done out here.
Yeah, they're really done out here.
I'm going to say,
Go ahead, Adam. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, real quick, like, the RB Leipzig... first of all, I feel like a couple weeks ago, we were like, oh, yeah, that's done. Like, let's, whatever, Bayern again. But, like, RB Leipzig has, you know, stayed on top of it. Bayern's dropped a couple of points the last couple of weeks. And especially as Bayern's traveled over to, you know, Japan to win Club World Cup and all that good stuff. But RB Leipzig this weekend, also coming back from like 2-0 down to like win 3-2, like especially in the last minute, like they're, you know, going back to Neil's talk about Ligue 1 in terms of Hungary, like RB Leipzig's like, nah, let's just go for it. And again, RB Leipzig looking like they might be like, I mean, they're about to go to Anfield for the return leg of the Champions League match that they lost. And at first you'd be like, well, maybe they don't want to focus on that because Anfield's such a fortress, but Chelsea took care of that. But anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute. But so we'll see, though. But it'll be interesting. Obviously, Bayern's still in the Champions League and much more in a driver's position there. But if Leipzig do get knocked out of Champions League, you know, come next week, how that influences them going forward. Because again, now it's all focus. And, you know, Bayern has dropped points recently. Obviously, all sorts of things can happen because as they move forward in Champions League, it gets rougher and, you know, squad rotation. Maybe they drop some points on the weekends in Bundesliga. So that's definitely a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be. It's like a couple weeks ago, I don't think I thought it was going to be this close, but it's definitely going to be interesting going forward. It is very surprising to see Dortmund like struggling this bad, like trying to make like salvage Champions League right now, but we'll see what goes on with them, especially over the summer, because, you know, their usual transfer season comings, well, mostly goings, it seems, when it comes to Dortmund.
Well, yeah, I mean, to your point, I think RB Leipzig, Adam, is going to get, particularly in their backfield, is going to lose.
Yeah, rated. Both. Yeah,
Umpakameno and Konate at the, like, in the same window, because Konate's been linked to Manchester United, Liverpool, you know, all these clubs that need help at the center half position, right? And then Umpakamenko's, I'm sorry for butchering his name, and I apologize. His stock has gone down significantly. And Konate's has gone up in comparison, and he's been linked everywhere. You know, I really, and you know, we are talking about a Leipzig side that has a midfield of a young man like Tyler Adams, Sabitzer, Campbell, you know.
Szoboszlai.
Yeah, I mean, these are names that, several seasons. I mean, Campbell was probably several seasons ago was a linchpin in RB Leipzig and their success. And he was the only one, and he was it in their midfield. And now they've been able to expand. It is incredibly exciting, Ama, to see RB Leipzig in this kind of position. However, the part that is gross about it is the fact that they are owned by Red Bull, and Red Bull has been driving all of their money. It's the reason they're able to acquire the talents of all these players. I don't think they're going to be able to keep all of these players.
I mean, like, no matter how you slice it, money matters in football, as little as we might like that. It does matter, and the success of RB Leipzig shows. And honestly, the success of the RB teams across the globe is part and parcel of that storyline. I like you have, you know, there are so many times Arsenal was linked with Upamecano, and it never happened. I remember like, oh, it's either him or Umtiti or Kalidou Koulibaly, right? Like we were all looking for this guy, and he's had a couple injuries, blah blah blah. But when I look at the Bayern team and like their ability to squad rotate, and I look at Leipzig, I still feel like even if RB Leipzig stays in the Champions League, if they don't get knocked out, they, you know, I don't know that they're at that much of a disadvantage to Bayern battling it out for the title. Because, you know, as dominant as Bayern has been, they've taken some L's this season.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I
mean? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And not only that, and we should have prefaced this, or I should have prefaced this with my statement. Umpapa in the Congo is...
Wait.
So let's try
where,
that.
Where are we in the Congo?
That's what I thought you said as well. I thought it was like up in the Congo. I was like, wait,
Next on a Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego episode of edition of the Banter Pub. Like, what?
Anyway.
Go ahead, Neil.
He is already off to Bayern in the summer anyway. So he's already gone. So that's one player already off the table for Leipzig for next season. Konate's next on the chopping block. And I think... like from a striker standpoint, we're forgetting about Justin Kluivert. Yes, forgetting. His name is whipping my ass. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's good. No, we're not forgetting about him. Like, but they have a few options, you know. But like I said, I feel like they can go toe to toe, even though they have like a slightly lower caliber of player. But they have youth and. And I feel like a chip on their shoulder, and it's they always do well enough in the Champions League. I would like for them to like focus on upsetting Bayern in the Bundesliga. That would be really fantastic, and I wish all the best to Tyler Adams in that fight.
Right. Well, we'll see. Because usually this point in time is when Bayern really separates themselves. I mean, previous seasons have been earlier, but it's typically March where, now it's went from 2 to 13 and nobody knows what happened. And their squad is still stacked like Cat Doll or Cash Doll. So,
wow.
I don't see it. I can see them competing, but I can see Bayern separating and leaving no prisoner after this.
Also, it's Bundesliga, unlike a lot of other leagues. 18 squads, 34 matches or 34 match weeks. You know what I mean? Like, so they play fewer games in the league. And so, like, this is where they're closer to the end. They're closer to the end. And so they play fewer games. So that whole fatigue... I don't know if you guys notice it across the leagues, but like, is COVID playing an issue and like having the truncated summer break period because of Project Restart or just COVID suspending leagues and having things coming back? Like, there are lots of to me question marks about this season. As much as Liverpool's title got the asterisk, I feel like this season should also come with an asterisk, given the state of the world.
Exactly. And speaking of asterisks that we don't want to see, let's talk about Serie A. Yeah, Inter Milan doing the damn thing. Conte, the first ball manager to win the Premier League, I will say. Don't let that hairpiece fool you. He got the squad up. 59 points after 25 games. AC Milan, Zlatan's revenge, 53 at 25. Juventus, the big surprise, 49 at 24 points. And Atalanta also tied with 49. But they're tied on points, but Juventus is ahead, even though on superior goal difference.
Well, they have a game in hand as well, Juve.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, right. Have a game in hand too. So Neil, any words to say? You think that it's over? The Serie A race is
over? It is another week. Inter is at the top of the table. It is back to the 90s all over again with Inter doing the damn thing. And Inter's going to get raided in the summer. I know. It's going to be sad. But right now, we're going to keep a lot of the core players. We're going to probably keep Lautaro. We're going to keep Lukaku. We're going to keep Vidal. We're going to keep at least one of our center backs, probably Skriniar. But I think, you know, Inter is poised to do, certainly to win the title at this point. I don't see the only club that is going to give us a challenge from points is AC Milan, and we dusted them in the Derby. So they're irrelevant at this point as far as this season is concerned. And, you know, the big Swedish fish can, you know, sulk in retirement next season because he is not going to have anything to play for, so he might as well retire, at least from Serie A. He could go back to the LA Galaxy, but I don't think LA wants him there anymore. So, yeah. I am really pleased with how Inter is playing. You know, I don't see any other club coming close to challenging them. I think there was a time probably earlier in the season where Juventus was far and away the best club in Italy, and we see how that turned out. You know, I mean, when you buy old players and you rely on old players, and you rely on old legs, and your club is called the old lady.
And you hire a manager that's the Frank Lampard of Italy.
Well, we'll get to that later on, but yes. I mean, hey, you know, what can I say? What else can be said about the rest of the Serie A table other than, oh, well. I mean, they tried, I guess.
I told you, man, last week. I told you the week before that. So I'm going to ask, like I do every week, the age-old question. Why must you boo me when I'm right? Because I told you before, Inter have this sewn up. They're just playing lights-out stuff. Down in Italy, I just don't see anybody catching up with them. And lo and behold, it's another week where, once again, Inter Milan have done the thing. Like, I just don't understand what it is that you want from me anymore, other than that I'm going to come in here every week and I'm going to say this every single week. This is not to pad Neil's ego because he supports Inter. And we all know how that's something that we're just going to have to deal with going forward. However, what I will say is that can anybody catch Inter? The answer is no. Unless Inter falter themselves, they are winning the Serie A. It's just that's it. There's nothing else to discuss here. Bun AC Milan, Bun BMS. It is BMS that we called him, right? BMS. Pretty sure it's BMS.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
It's accurate.
Bon BMS, Bon Reynaldo, Bon, you know, Juventus, Bon, all of them clubs there, every last one of them, all of you, not good enough. Conte and company have it sewn up this season. Good luck getting second. Maybe some of you will qualify for the Champions League. Who knows? You know, that is in play. But the league? No. Who's stopping them? At what point can you see this full run of form ending? You just can't, can you? So it's just like, nah. Give it to Inter. Give it to Inter and let's just wrap this puppy up. You know what I mean?
Right. Give it to Inter. Their fixture list, I was just checking it out. I mean, they have Juventus way later on in the year. They play Atalanta this week, which will be a test. If they can at least get a point out of. And those are like the top two toughest fixtures, Juventus and Atalanta. And if they can get a draw, if they can get a point out of both of them, the rest of the league, they got it. I'll be interested to see if once they win the league this year, are they going to go for it next year, or are they going to focus on Europe? And particularly now with the whole issue with their owner and the faltering faltering Chinese league, what effect that's going to have on their budget come the summer. But I'm excited to see a new champion in Serie A, because Juventus I don't like. I do like Weston McKennie. Shout out to Weston, Black Excellence. But yes, we need new. We need something new.
Whose deal from Schalke was made permanent today, if I remember rightly.
Yep, sure was.
So congratulations to him. Schalke, this is what you get for once again gambling with your lives. And you held out thinking that you wouldn't have to sell Weston McKennie. Well, now you have no choice because you're definitely going down. I was gonna kind of add that bit in, but I figured if we were segueing to Serie A, it would be easier to kind of talk about that and kind of tie up the Bundesliga chat as well. So yes, while Schalke is definitely going down and Weston McKennie has moved to a different club, I hope that he continues to do well, because yeah, Juventus's future, not really entirely sure what's going to go on with that. Haven't seen much of Aaron Ramsey. Haven't seen much of Paulo Dybala is there, but he's not in form, so it's kind of like he's not there. And then you've got a big man like Weston McKennie, who, as I said before, I really think it's going to be interesting to see what happens if Pirlo gets sacked, because I do think that he's going to get sacked. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that one out there. And who it is that Juventus brings in the summer to kind of shore up from the old legs that they desperately need to get rid of. Like, contrary for Old Men FC, just really needs a revamp. And I think Weston McKennie's a good bit of business, but you can't just have Weston McKennie. Do you know what I mean?
And, you know, Dybala is interesting because he was one of the first people that caught COVID. And his form and him having COVID multiple times, I don't think it's a coincidence. But that's another story for another time. Let's move on to the last league, the dreaded English Premier League, where you know who.
Is it? Are you really that pressed to talk about Manchester City that you're going to skip Spain?
Like, you know what?
I understand Manchester City is 15 points clear of everybody else. 15. I get it.
Oh my God.
I get it.
How many points do you have?
But I think it'd be a disservice if we just skip La Liga, because Barcelona still hasn't done anything. And Atletico Madrid is still at the top of the table. But you want to go right to Manchester City.
Before we go anywhere, and before we talk about anything Barcelona related, you already know what I have to do first. Previously on Are You Being Barcelona'd?
Right. I think the biggest story, we'll talk about La Liga first. The biggest story, you know, Atleti is far and behold, they're going to win the league. No problems. Biggest story, Barcelona raided. I don't know what a better apt comparison is for how they were just raided, and former president Bartomeu arrested. Wow,
the names are just kicking our asses.
Yeah,
today,
yeah, that name kicked my butt just now. I don't know what I was. I he was outside of the mind after this whole messy ordeal, but taken in. Probably going to be sent down over the same multiple issues, but what's come around.
I'm not definitely going to leave. Like, it's just like, even with everything that's happening, we're still like, nah, we're going to make more drama. We needed a 93rd minute header in a game that ended in 94 minutes to force it to go to extra time against Sevilla, where we won against a Sevilla team that was down to the 10th man. Or down to 10 men, and we wanted an extra time. It's just been that crazy of a week. Shout out to the women who did not have any questions about winning their Champions League match. But That's like the only bright spot in Barcelona is the women on a consistent basis. The men are just trash and just doing all sorts of stuff. And also in addition, I forgot one extra thing that happened this week is that the medical staff is misdiagnosing players, because a big deal that we've had all season is our injury woes, especially our back line. We're missing Ansu Fati, the future of Barca, who was out in early September and should have been back by now, but we haven't seen him yet. So the medical staff, another news story that broke this week, and questions about how good the medical staff is and misdiagnosing injuries, because guys are having relapses left and right. And somehow still maybe having an outside chance of maybe get it, but needing Atleti to drop serious amounts of points. Has to pray Atleti goes deep into Champions League and maybe gets just distracted and drops enough points in La Liga to maybe make it a race towards
the I have to try to talk myself
maybe into some form of trophy. Maybe that,
you need to deal with reality, Adam. That is not going to happen, okay? You got Ronald Koeman as your manager. A Ronald Koeman that played Dominic Calvert-Lewin as a right back.
That's because he couldn't tell the difference between him and Mason Holgate. He thought that
Okay. Bam.
You probably can't tell the difference between Dembele and Ansu Fati either.
Okay, all right. Now let's just go ahead and keep it moving. Because we just don't need to do this, boys. We don't.
Disrespectful.
Son. Like, Black History Month was literally 4 days ago. Can we please just let the shit cook? Anyway.
This is Black Wrath Month now, so.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They're going to have it. But go ahead.
Look, listen. The whole point is that, once again, I'm going to have to repeat myself. This club is a wholly unserious organization. Barcelona are a mess. They are an absolute mess. What are you doing getting raided during a global Panasonic, bro? What? Are you serious? You couldn't keep your shit together for at least the rest of the season before this shit happens? So you didn't sell Messi like you should have. Yeah? Ansu Fati is pretty much what? Done for at least another couple of months, Adam, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, they thought hopefully it was March. I mean, at this point, it's like no reason to rush him back, like to further risk him, so.
I mean, Dembele might as well be wearing a sandwich board that says, get me out of here, because he doesn't want to play for the club anymore. Meanwhile, fucking president's getting raided. And then on top of all that sort of stuff, like the Champions League defeat from the other week. I know that still, like, I know Piqué's still having nightmares about Kylian Mbappé doing a fucking roadrunner to his Wile E. Coyote. Like, it's just sensational how spectacular this fall from grace is for Barcelona. Every month, if not every week, there is something remarkable that happens to this club. And you think to yourself, they probably hit rock bottom now, so maybe they can focus on... Nope! They're getting raided by the feds, bro. Like, I just...
Real quick to answer that, I just want to say that during the broadcast on Wednesday against Sevilla, they actually were like, well, maybe they might need a player like to Coutinho to come in. We've gotten to the point that we're waiting for Philippe Coutinho to potentially save this team. Okay, go ahead, Abba. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say how absurd it was. Like, the level of, like, Bartomeu was doing wild things like buying followers and selling or buying the services of folks to slander Piqué and Messi online.
This guy was doing Twitter warfare in these streets while the club is falling apart. I cannot with Barcelona anymore. Listen, La Liga, it's a done deal. Atleti's got this sewn up. We don't need to go any further. Is anybody winning the league off them this season? Absolutely not. Not the way that they're playing. But Barcelona, I am not going to say that this is like they've hit rock bottom, because I'm not sure they have. Did you know what I mean? Like, is it over yet? Like, have they actually finished fucking up yet? Like, is it or is this spectacular fall from grace going to continue? I've never seen someone tumble like this. Like, in my lifetime, not even when Liverpool almost went into administration. This is like really bad for Barcelona. Like, how do you bounce back from this?
You don't. You don't, and I'm the Barca fan. And it's really like, it's one of those things where I always respect, like, I think Jerry Krause of the Bulls, he did it prematurely, but there's a point where you know the dynasty's going to end. Like, Lionel Messi is, my opinion, of course, biased, but I mean, I don't think if you have him below your top three ever to play, I question what your whatever brand, like, who's your plug? Because please let me know. But we depend on him way too much to create, and he's still amazing at doing it. He's basically saving the team week in, week out. But you just can't depend on, even if he is the greatest of all time, a 33, going to be 34 this summer, year old, to just do everything on the team, not when everybody's caught up and gotten better. And you just haven't done anything. Last year was the year to, like, that embarrassing defeat to Bayern in the Champions League. Last year was the year when he said, I want to go, like, work it out with him. Like, he said, I want to go, you sell him and just get as much money as you can and take a year off in the league. I mean, it's La Liga. You're not going to finish. I mean, it's still Barcelona. You're not going to finish lower than fourth. Start to give Ansu Fati the keys, trust Dembele, and figure out what else you need and start the youth movement. Because that's the other issue. Like Juventus in Italy, and we've just been patching it up with old players. But we've been kind of making it work. And I mean, you still get to a Champions League semifinal. It's like, okay, it's not that bad, but you're not set up for the future. The Antoine Griezmann move, I am still like, I don't understand this waste of money. And it's proven to be true. But yeah, the best thing was to do it last year. Cut ties with Messi. No farewell tour, but just get as much money as you can, send them out of the league and to Man City, like, or PS, whatever, and just lick your wounds and rebuild and go from there. But yeah, I'm more worried about long term how it affects us. Because yeah, like, this year was the year to be like, okay, we'll still finish fourth if we have. I can't, like, it could look like a Liverpool next season. Like, I won't be surprised if it looks like that if Messi does leave. So.
Right. Well, making the Champions League semifinal is great unless you lose an 8-2.
Yeah.
But Messi's probably going to go for free, and y'all definitely going to be in Spain.
Worst case. Exactly. But,
let's move on to the Premier League. You know, I'm not going to say much. City won. We beat Wolves 3-1. Gabriel Jesus rises again. God bless. 15 points up. 21st win in a row. We are breaking records. No one can stop us. We all the way up. So that's all I got to say about that. Well, we'll go down in order. Neil, United, how you feel this week?
I mean, we drew with Palace. As far as what I think about City, y'all are another team. You were just talking about Barcelona getting raided. Y'all are literally about to get raided this summer if you're not careful. We saw what happened with Liverpool, and they're trying to protect, you know, and them not worrying about anything once they won the league. Yes, sure, you did an amazing job buying players in the summer, right? You've built your defensive front to protect Ederson when he makes mistakes, because he makes mistakes. Exactly. In the midfield, y'all are pretty solid. I think the one position that is in limbo for y'all at the moment is going to be striker, because Gabriel Jesus, you know, he's been rumored to leave for several seasons now, and I think this coming summer is no different. So, you know,
well, don't worry, we got Haaland in the pipeline, so we good.
Oh, you're gonna pick up that Nazi youth? Go right ahead.
Hey, you know, at this point, as long as we getting trophies, ain't no thing. And I'm sure y'all feel the same way.
As we know from the court of arbitration in sports, like, he has no compunctions when it comes to winning. he'll do anything, will sell his soul for a city victory. So I'm not worried. I'm not surprised by Jonathan's behavior. I'll say that.
Speaking of begging for wins, let's talk about 10th place Arsenal.
Yeah, 10th place Arsenal is actually in a decent spot. We've only won two of our last five, but the performances leave, like, the thing about people bantering Arsenal for me this season is like, you think we don't know that we're in a bad place? You know what I'm saying? Like, you think we don't know? We who lived through the whole decade we just came out of? Like, nah, we know where we are, right? And we're happy that we have a coach that's putting us in a decent position. We're happy that we've finally gotten some reasonable deals done. We're terminating contracts. We're doing things to like give the man space to build. And so that's what we're doing. We're building. If we end up outside of the European places, I won't go crazy. You know why? Because we build, focus, and on developing your players. That's what it is. All that said, our next match is against Burnley. And yeah, you two at the quote unquote top get to face each other in the next matchup. So that should be entertaining to watch. We've got Burnley before Tottenham, and but we've had a decent run, man. The team has shown character in the last couple matches. Even if you go down, you don't put your head down. You dust yourself off and go score goals. Like, it's been a good run.
I'm glad that you're at this stage of grief where you're accepting the unacceptable. It's beautiful. I shared an article I could share with the rest of the Banter Pub too.
You know what's funny is that we've been at this. That's exactly my point. Like, we've been past acceptance. Like, that's, we know where we are. We've known where we are. It's the people on the outside looking in that have no idea what it feels like. Well, I guess maybe you do. We're just experiencing it for the first time. And that's been your history. Maybe.
Well, it ain't our history right now. And the record books say 2021, they're going to see champion, not 10th place. Adam,
don't say
wow.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
I mean, I'm with Ama in terms of accepting the grief. Again, I'm trying to be like optimistic in terms of how high we can finish. Like, and I'm very, you know, again, Europa League is stacked. I'm not going to play with like who's still there and who can. I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, especially if we're going to keep getting forced to play neutral games in like very like home games, I'm sorry, in neutral places, that can definitely turn a game in. But yeah, just like Ama said, we've had a really good run. I mean, I think again, going back to Europa, like I like what, even when we've lost, like again, the Man City game, we did lose. That's our, I think our main issue right now is we have slow starts. And if we do something bad, then we have to turn it around. We're always, you know, it's extra to turn around. But again, right after Man City, we're down one, but we come back and win away. Showed some heart, came back against Benfica after going down in the second half. So I like the performances. I think Pepe is there. He's showing out a bit more. I think there's a big difference with the youth movement that Arteta has done more recently. I think he's just playing more freely and more comfortable with people. He's probably just was like, when Emile Smith Rowe and Saka were trying to break into the team, he was probably playing with them and vibing with them on a whole, you know, they're closer to his age range. He seems to have a different connection with them. It's a great look going forward. Like, what I'm interested to see is what we keep this summer, what we'll have to sell, because that's going to happen, and how we move forward with, you know, whatever the situation is. But, you know, you accept it. You hope you don't fall like too far down, but we're going to be in the league next year. We still have, like, might not have the deepest pockets, but still a lot that we can do. So I'm with Ama. Like, I'm hopeful. It's what it is. Everybody has that season in recent years where it's like, okay, this is just bad. It's like the reset, and, you know, you come out of it. So I'm hopeful for what can come out of it.
Joseph, you want to close us out?
Well, we said that a successful season looks like winning one of the cup competitions or finishing within the Champions League places, and it's all in on Europa League, I think. That certainly is a statement of intent. The way that we turned over Benfica, when really and truly that was a much tougher test than most will give it credit for. I think we've done well to do to dump them out of the competition, and now we can just focus on what's right in front of us going forward. Obviously, you know, the how many times we have to tell you this old man Classico between Manchester United and AC Milan, that obviously is something that I'll be keeping an eye on. But in terms of the league itself, we just need to continue to put one foot in front of the other. We just need to stack wins and see where we end up. If we end up in the Europa Conference stage, then I guess, you know, then that's just what we'll have to take. We should be a side that is in the Champions League, and we're just not there yet. So I will look forward to continuing to perform excitingly, really, and show really good, you know, character in the Europa League, and see where it gets us. If we win that and we get in the Champions League, then fantastic. If we don't win the Europa League, but we manage to go ahead and somehow, by virtue of a miracle, finish either fourth or fifth, then happy days. I'll take that. But we have to put the hard graft in somewhere. And I think personally, we've got plenty in the tank to do both. So we should make a good showing of both. I don't think we should have to choose between one or the other. But I am confident that we're going to win the Europa League. I personally think that we can make the final. So I really hope that the boys do it. That's kind
of revenge match against Olympiakos.
Against Olympiakos, yes. I mean, we're going to bury the ghost against them. I'm not worried about that. It's also going to be good to see Sokratis again. So, you know, hopefully he doesn't have too good a day. But yeah. I think the Europa League is a competition that we can win. So I hope we go about doing that.
Yeah. Go ahead, Alma.
I was going to say, like, I'm going to give a shout out to our listener, Ms. Stephanie, in the Discord for picking a Greek team that is not Olympiakos. I think she ended up picking AEK, and I said I hate Olympiakos for a multitude of reasons. And before the Arsenal debacle, it was simply because they're the rival team in Athens of Panathinaikos, whom I have supported for several years. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to the showdown in the Europa League, round of 16. And I hope we give it to them. Rough, but no Vaseline.
Shout out Ice Cube. And there you have it. The league is so out of sight for Arsenal that they're talking not even about the Premier League, but the Europa League. But that being said, we're going to take a little break. As Joseph says very eloquently, pay some bills. And we'll be right back to talk about United States soccer.
The goddamn sauce. 9 different flavors, same goddamn feeling. Share our passion for sauce and discover the full goddamn range at www.thegdsauce.com. Use discount code TheBanterPubFC to save 50% when you cop the sauce. Hashtag boss up.
Okay, we're back. We're back. And United States... just to off the top, just letting y'all know, this is a place that's white supremacist and capitalist to the core, and it's no surprise that that core has manifested its way into the United States Soccer Federation. Seth John, who I always confuse in my head with Sean John. I'm glad I haven't made that mistake yet in public, but I'm just letting y'all know my struggle right now.
Oh my God. The first thing, Jonathan, is up why? Like, yeah, tonight has just been a case of like English is hard, is it not? Like, I don't know. Sean John, let's not disrespect. Let's not disrespect Diddy's, you know, line of menswear like this, because Seth John,
MAGA, MAGA John is his name now. So, for those that don't know what happened, the United States Soccer Federation, they held a, I think it's like a Congress. I think you can describe it as
annual general meeting.
Annual general meeting. Thank you, Amma. Where they were discussing the repeal of the policy to stand, a mandatory stand for the national anthem. I think that was on the debate. That was on like the docket to talk about. And Seth John, not to be confused with Sean John again, is, I think he's a former player, but definitely has some affiliation with the Proud Boys, I'm sure. Or some entity in the United States. He sits on the Athletic Council and the Athletes Council, I'm sorry, the Athletic Council. And, you know, they have a chance to give comments. And his comments were akin to the fact that slavery, only 8% of the population in the United States at the time owned slaves. So, you know, what's the big deal? Like, why are we talking about slavery in regards to the United States? Only a small amount of people did it. I didn't own slaves. I didn't benefit from white supremacy in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, I stand up for people of color all over the country. So, you know, it was in those veins. I won't go into it because for me, it was rather disgusting what he said. And now, a bit of several updates since that moment. So I want to open up. How do folks think? What were folks feeling? What were folks feeling? This is a space to be open now.
So there's a lot to unpack about Seth John, the comments, the vote, everything. Several folks in the Black soccer space have spoken about this. We made an immediate public statement about it on our Twitter and in our Discord about the situation. We told our community that we were going to cover it. So that's what the fuck we're doing. As Jonathan said, when we were coming out of break, this is, you know, this is a federation that is not new to fuck shit, right? This is a federation that is not new to disastrous decisions. I mean, we can look at the jeans design in the kit from several years ago in the early 90s as a prime example. But at the end of the day, these comments should not come as a surprise. The vote should not come to be a surprise to anyone that's been paying attention to what's been happening with the U.S. Soccer Federation. We've seen with the women that they've been doing a whole lot of kneeling and standing simultaneously. When kneeling at the end of the day is not, we've said it and every other Black soccer voice has said the exact same thing. Kneeling is the bare minimum when it comes to addressing police violence, because guess what? There were several police officers who were kneeling on the neck of Black people when they were killing them. And then nothing ever happened to them after the fact. So kneeling is the bare minimum, right? That's first. Second, as far as the anthem policy is concerned and repeal and kind of renegotiating it or changing it, rather, is what they did via this vote, to say that the anthem will be played and all players are going to be required to stand from this point going forward. Again, we should not be surprised about this, right? This is a consistent thing with this federation where they have consistently shown that they care less about their black and brown players, and specifically their black ones. Even their white counterparts on the team don't care. Well, yes, some have spoken up. We've seen this example of Seth doing exactly what we expected him to do, right? And Seth did and what I mean by that is Seth is another example of a white person saying the quiet part out loud, right? Seth is an example of when someone tells you who they are the first time, believe them. And when it comes to racist pricks like Seth John, who last week, immediately after being removed from the U.S. Soccer Federation's leadership, was on Fox News saying that it was cancel culture. This is the same motherfucker, all right? So I don't want to hear anything about the ifs, ands, or buts about why Seth John should be protected or freedom of speech or any of that bullshit. There's no reason in the world why Seth John should have had a pulpit to begin with. There's no reason in the world why his voice should have been the primary voice. And then after the fact, players had to kind of apologize for what he said. Other federation officials had to apologize for what he said. Black soccer as a whole has kind of distanced themselves, at least in America, from the U.S. Soccer Federation. And you can count the banter pub in that number.
Yeah, real quick, I'd say the issue was debating, was before the vote to repeal the policy that required players to stand when the national anthem was played. And he was allowed to debate to provide an argument against the repeal. And he said... the biggest problem was when he spouted, like he said, he knew he was going to offend the masses, a great number of right-thinking individuals, and he started off he knew he was going to offend folks, and then he continued, and he was not interrupted. When he was interrupted, he was allowed to continue, right? Like, that's my problem. One of my problems. He got to speak for 7 minutes. Longer than any, I mean, if you sat and watched the AGM, and this was one of several issues that got voted on, this was by far the longest argument. People come in, drop 30 seconds, and bounce. This guy spewed racist nonsense for 7 minutes, was interrupted once about time, and he said, give me 30 seconds and continue to speak for 2 more minutes, right? That is how U.S. soccer failed in this moment. When asked about it, both the person hosting and the president of the federation had kind of mealy mouth. I couldn't hear what he was saying, blah, blah, blah. How are you running the meeting and you can't tell what the people are saying if you can't hear the argument? How are you going to vote if you can't hear the argument? Is this just for show? Right? Like, this is a problem with how the U.S. soccer is run. If you don't, you know, you're not engaged enough to detect what is an obviously problematic situation and act to prevent the escalation of this racist rhetoric that was being spewed at your the biggest meeting you're going to have all year. It's absurd. So letting the guy speak and then coming back with mealy mouth excuses after the fact, and then waiting. I think everybody was waiting for disavowing those statements for more action after the fact, which was not going to be sufficient, but it took forever. Individual players had to speak, you know, like it was just the response by U.S. soccer was irresponsible. And while ultimately Seth John was voted off the athletes council, they burned enough bridges where you're going to see folks turn their back on the U.S. Soccer Federation for their handling of this moment. I think it's really a litmus test for where we truly are. Because prior to that, there was a lot of talk about diversity and equity and inclusion. And in fact, one of those statements that disgusted me was the president of the U.S. Soccer Federation saying something like, well, you know, when it comes to DEI, you got to hear everybody's opinions, even if you don't agree with them. No, that is not what diversity, equity, and inclusion looks like, right? So it shows how far we have yet to go when, you know, even those who are espousing the values in your face have, you know, show a clear dichotomy between what they say and what they do, like right in front of your eyes. So you can see what was really going on.
And right. Yeah, it just, like you're saying, Ami, you're totally right. It, and you too, Neil, like, it just totally shows the performative nature that this federation, I mean, any institution, I said it last week, any institution is showing whatever in regards to Black lives and the just the ability and need to progress. That's just not going to happen because folks are bought into the performance but don't really want to do anything in regards to actual change. Adam, what are your thoughts on this?
It's just, you know what, it's the sad part for me is as the comments were rolling in, just as the news was breaking about what he said, I guess I'm starting to be desensitized to it, which is, I guess, part of the problem. Like, it's like, oh, that's what he said. Oh, interesting. Like, not surprised. He said the quiet part out loud that I'm sure a lot of people in the room who voted against the measure probably share a lot of the same thoughts. Even the people that sided with him on Twitter, we know it's a regular thing. Like, so it was just, and it's indicative as people have mentioned as well. It's just like, this is the U.S. Soccer Federation. It's, they're slow moving if they move at all. Sad to say that it's kind of par for the course for me, with the U.S. Soccer Federation. This doesn't surprise me. The response, like, cool that the Athletes Council approved him. I mean, they kind of had to, and I appreciate that their reasoning was also that, you know, not just that they were embarrassed, but also that what he did was, you know, a violation of, like, moral code. But the other part about it is, like, this stuff is on his Twitter feed going back to, like, it's there. Like, this man is basically has tweets on his feed that basically blamed Ahmaud Arbery for his, like his own death. So, I'm pretty sure, maybe, I feel like it just goes back. Somebody had to have said something to the Athletes Council before about him, but I'm sure those things were just swept away, or maybe nobody cared enough to say, well, you know, maybe he's not that volatile or will ever do anything. So as long as he's, you know, chill with us, I don't know. It's just right. But again, I feel like somebody had to have said something. And even if somebody did it, that's just the U.S. Soccer Federation. That's U.S. Olympics, U.S. athletics in general, just is, slow to act unless forced to, and they're embarrassed and, or just legally compelled. So, you know, glad for all the action that was taken, but just not swift enough. And, you know, hopefully it's just, they can root out a lot of the people that have the same side of mentalities and mind states earlier. And, you know, make it a more inclusive space for the people that are truly love the game and, want to see it move forward.
Right. Right. But I think Ami brought up a good point around the contrast between the women's national team in regards to the policy of standing before the anthem. Do you want to touch on that real quick before we move to Joseph?
Yeah, all I was going to say is this, that the policy, you know, the vote we were talking about and the comments came up before the vote to repeal the policy that required players representing the country to stand for the national anthem. Like, as we're repealing the letter of the law, right, the U.S. women's national team somehow spontaneously also stood, right? So it's almost like the rule going away doesn't matter because they're going to stand anyway. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's another mechanism to remove the whatever the feeling is, the thing that makes people uncomfortable when they see players kneel. That thing has been successful regardless of what the letter of the law is. And so even this victory, quote unquote, in the by having this policy off the books, it's to me it's a Pyrrhic victory because I felt like I saw the black players concede to the discomfort of the handful of white players that refused to kneel in solidarity with their teammates who just want black people to live.
No, I think this is a matter of, again, it's performative. We knew that performance is going to happen. So I guess now it's a question of what is going to happen next? You can repeal this standing of anthem. That's performative. But like, what are the tangible things that can happen? Like, how are black players going to relate to this soccer federation? How is it going to reflect in the league play? How is it going to reflect in the day to day, international, the Gold Cup, and CONCACAF tournaments, stuff like that? Like, what are people doing to put the work in to actually move policies? I know Crystal Dunn was big on that and trying to figure out, like, you know, it's not about kneeling anymore, similar to what Winfred Zaha said too, but like, it's beyond kneeling now. It's like actually trying to do the work. And I'd be interested to see what that work entails. You know, the MLS has the Black Players Union, which I've been advocating for globally for a long time. I'm happy they did it. And the NWSL is also figuring out their Black Players Union. I'll be interested to see who they connect with, who are the people in the community that they connect with more deeply, so we can actually figure out tangible solutions to this issue. Because, you know, Black people are at stake here; our lives are at stake every single day, and this is again, it's a microcosm of what the United States is. And you know, we just came back today from the U.S. House voting for this George Floyd safety police bill, which gives more money to police. It does nothing. It actually, I think Neil, you brought up on Twitter, like the things that have been voted in this bill were the things that killed George Floyd. So you're not actually doing us any favors. This is very performative. So I'm interested to see what the work's going to look like come the rest of this year, at least. Give y'all time to take a breath. We're going to take another short break, and we'll be right back.
The goddamn sauce. 9 different flavors, same goddamn feeling. Share our passion for sauce and discover the full goddamn range at www.thegdsauce.com. Boss up.
Okay, welcome back, y'all. Hopefully we'll close out today's show with some positive things. If not, that's okay. This is how we're feeling. We're jumping into extra time. So for folks that don't know what extra time is, we give all the hosts of the Banter Pub a chance to talk about things that have happened that they want to mention briefly. I will not be timing y'all strictly, but y'all know the time. So I want to start with Adam.
Thank you, sir. Just for my extra time, moving from Black History Month, it is now Women's History Month in March. Always in support of the women, as I mentioned earlier in the show. Just really happy that Women's Champions League is back now in UEFA. Barcelona is the only bright spot. The women's team right now is pretty much the only bright spot in my football fan life. So it's great to see them win a beautiful header. The most perfect header I've seen this week, at least. So again, shouts out to the Women's Champions League and all the women's soccer players keeping it going. Love watching y'all.
Beautiful, beautiful. Neil?
For my extra time this week, I'm just going to say, folks, we dropped the first of many to come set pieces with fantastic intro music. You've heard our new intro music for season two, and we have equally amazing intro music from one of our very own hosts, Joseph, for our set pieces. Our set pieces are condensed versions of the episodes where they are talking about a specific topic. So we highly urge you that it just dropped. It's gonna drop right before the episode, not this one, but the episode 42. So those set pieces are gonna come thick and fast. So look out for the first one where we are talking about, I believe, the Fantasy Premier League.
Perfect. Thank you, Neil. And now my brother, Alma, booyah, get shot. What's up with Extra Time?
Yeah, see, so my Extra Time this week, I think I'm going to try to keep it musical as much as possible, at least the music that's inspiring me in the week. This week, it's a compatriot of mine, Tobichukwu Mwigwe, who reinterpreted Gil Scott Heron's classic, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, for a YouTube Originals Black Renaissance series. Check it out. It's dope. The imagery, the lyrics themselves, just the whole ethos of the song is filling me up right now, and I'm happy with that. You should check out the work that he does with his producer Linnell Grant and his wife. That's it. That's it for me this week.
Blessings. Brother Joseph, what's for Extra Time tonight?
Just a couple of things. I didn't say anything about Seth John because everything had been expressed already. I hope now that he has plenty of time to go and, have sex with his guns or whatever he does all day when he's not being racist, that he thinks about his life and that he thinks about maybe choosing to not be such a piece of shit going forward. I'm not holding my breath though. Thank you to Neil about the intro music. That's something that has been on my mind this week. Like, I really do enjoy making this stuff. And I guess the only thing left to say is that, you know, I didn't know that this stuff was made on a deadline, because if it had, it wouldn't have sounded as good as it does now. So I guess I can stand here and feel plenty vindicated that all these beats that I dropped on your head top, they were delivered on time. I guess it was just suppose, you know, maybe certain people's timelines just weren't, I guess they weren't synchronized with the actual creative process, but I guess that's what you get when you talk about things that you just purely don't understand, like the, you know, production of a podcast in that process. So that's my Extra Time this week.
always gotta throw them bombs at us, like Funk Flex. I appreciate it, Joseph. We all appreciate it. My Extra Time is music related to, you know, I love Black women so much, and there's this one French singer. Well, not I'm sorry, not French. Who am I? She's from Mali. She's a French Mali. She's a francophone from Mali. I will never call out a colonizer like that again. I apologize for everybody at the pub. Aya Nakamura. Folks might know her from our hit song Zsa Zsa, which is blowing up. It's been blown up, but she just recently came out with an album this past year, which has been amazing. And I been looking respectfully at her music videos, and she's an amazing artist. So I just want to big up Aya Nakamura one time. So thank you, Aya, for doing the Lord's work, as they say. So thank you all for listening to yet another episode of the Vanderpump FC, the sauciest team in the game, spiciest takes on the pitch. Make sure you follow us on Instagram and Twitter, and it's at the Vanderpump FC. We also are on YouTube, so please follow and subscribe to us on YouTube and Twitch, if you like that sort of thing. And if you like what you heard today, again, please be sure to like, subscribe, follow, review, share it with all your friends. Do everything that you can to pick us up on your favorite platform. Last thing, speaking of the Manchester Derby, we are doing a watch along this week, and we have a Discord channel. So if you are interested and want to see Manchester City take another stroll to the Premier League title, feel free to hit us up via Twitter or Instagram. We'll connect you. We really want to build a soccer community out. So thankful to see y'all. So for Adam, Neil, Amma, Joseph, Rosa on the ones and twos, and myself, Jonathan, thank y'all and take care. Peace.